His wife wrote a teary letter to the president of Senegal. Oh, you don't know what it's like to have my husband away when my daughter comes home from school. Well, the next day, a widow from Chad responded, saying, well, you don't know what it's like to have my husband taken away by your husband for 25 years. And her picture was all over the Senegalese press. Habré is saying that he doesn't want to come to court. So Souleymane Gengeng, one of the lead victims, wrote an open letter to Hissen Habré saying, wait, we fought 25 years to get to court. You were once our omnipotent dictator, and now you're afraid to look us in the face and to hear our stories. So the fact that the victims have played such a protagonistic role in this case, I think makes it very much more inspiring for victims around the world. And it also makes it much more difficult for Hissen Habré to say, no, I'm being persecuted by, you know, the international community or whatever.
So when does a dictator get tried by the International Criminal Court, for example? And when does something like this happen? A neighboring country actually tries the person.
Well, Habré's alleged crimes took place before the International Criminal Court was established. So the ICC wouldn't have jurisdiction over these crimes. I mean, the ICC is a court of last resort. It's only supposed to kick in when national courts cannot. This case is the first case in Africa going to trial on what's called universal jurisdiction, which is the Pinochet principle, which says that certain crimes are so heinous that wherever you are, the courts of that country can prosecute you. So if you're alleged to have committed torture and you come to the United States is, if they don't extradite you back, is supposed to prosecute you in the United States.
Attorney Reed Brody of Human Rights Watch talking about the former Chadian dictator Hissen Habré, who's on trial in Dakar, Senegal. The trial has just been delayed 45 days. We'll keep following the story. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh. Special thanks to Sam Alkoff and Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our hosts Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Today we'll talk about auto safety and our government's lackluster performance related to dangerously flawed vehicles.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of 70 years after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the ever-present nuclear threat, Thursday, August 6th, at the Japanese American Historical Plaza at Waterfront Park in Portland. 70 years after Hiroshima and Nagasaki will feature speakers and performers, including Portland Taiko, and will provide opportunities for attendees to get involved in efforts to abolish nuclear weapons. That's 70 years after Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The ever-present nuclear threat, Thursday, August 6th, 6 p.m. at the Japanese American Historical Plaza at Northwest NATO Parkway and Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 23rd Annual Clinton Division Street Fair, Saturday, July 25th, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., with an after-party on Clinton Street from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. The community parade, Metamorphosis, will start at 10:45 a.m. There will also be artisan, craft, and community booths, sidewalk sales, live music, food, and more. Again, that's the 23rd Annual Clinton Division Street Fair, Saturday, July 25th, from 10 to 5 p.m., with an after-party on Clinton Street going until 9 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor, along with North Portland Community Building Group, Proper, of the We Can Do It Together community concert. Local politicians, community activists, faith groups, and artists will join in a day of unity, song, and prayer in Kenton Park on Saturday, August 8th, from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. This concert will feature a variety of local artists that will rally for unity in this time of unrest. Again, that's the We Can Do It Together community concert, Saturday, August 8th, from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Kenton Park at North Kilpatrick and Delaware in Portland. More information can be found at KBOO.FM on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, a full-service automotive shop located next to Portland's Selwood Bridge for over 30 years. They're a Blue Seal certified shop committed to client care and community support. Information on their eco certification, client carbon neutral program, courtesy shuttle, rentals, and more at tomdwyer.com or by calling 503-230-2300.
USA in your Chevrolet, America's asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA, America's the greatest land of all. On a highway or a road along a levee, performance is sweeter, nothing can beat her. Life is completer in a Chevy, so make a date today to see the USA. See it in your Chevrolet.
Traveling east. Those were the days.
Oh yes, those wonderful big chromium beasts.
No, but more than that, the days when square white women would sing and tell you what to buy.
Those Dinah Shore, America's sweetheart, or some such thing. Well, I wanted to open with that because the ironic thing is that we now understand that General Motors has enormous, well, we not a surprise, enormous power in Congress. And essentially, we have been blocking safety rules, regulations, and information about the failings of our automobiles for many, many years. And it's just, it's become so outrageous. Everyone will remember Ralph Nader when he published Unsafe at Any Speed about the Pinto.
Right. That's the title of today's episode, by the way.
Of our show?
Yeah, Unsafe at Any Speed. Pinto, no. Unsafe at Any Speed.
Speed, okay. And there's a big story in the business section of the New York Times yesterday, including the role of the Chamber of Commerce and the various powerful bodies in pushing Congress away from real control, real oversight, real regulation of the auto industry in terms of issues of safety, not to mention issues of better, more efficient automobiles.
There was a vote in the Senate late last week on automotive safety. The Senate voted down a provision that would have made it a crime for auto manufacturers to conceal the fact that their products have potentially deadly defects. That's not a crime. So you can make a car in the United States. You can knowingly sell it with a defect that you know all about.
And like an ignition that suddenly quits.
Right. Or something that blows up. Or an airbag that doesn't work.
Or works too well.
That's not a crime.
No.
No.
So what they essentially have done is they've shielded corporate individuals, persons, real people, from any kind of action when they are guilty, knowingly, of producing a product that can maim or kill people.
Yeah, and they're also protecting corporate people, too.
Well, absolutely. And
human beings, but corporations.
Yeah, I think that
which are people.
It's really important when we have conversations about the nature of capitalism. We get into these kind of theoretical models of, well, you know, competition, the this, the that, the ability to build better product because of that competition, because of the way in which our system operates, and it becomes a gross mythology. The last time we really had a direct conflict in government with the manufacturers, with the powerful and rich, was way back in the time of Teddy Roosevelt.
No, that's not true.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's not true.
Not true?
Yeah, we just won a battle to preserve net neutrality in the very recent
past. That's true. You're right.
Okay, but right. Continue.
Shouldn't forget that. Right. That was an amazing victory.
Yeah, actually. That was fantastic. But please, go on.
No. Well, yes, my point is that in essence, our system allows in the encouragement of profit and of the sale of product an incredibly
unoversighted system. And the Congress is so corrupted that it seems unlikely that we will ever get any kind of protections for the consumer in many, many areas. Now, net neutrality is an example of a new and blooming thing being created, as opposed to the old thing being regulated.
Yeah, and net neutrality is not really about manufacturing.
We
should be clear about that.
No.
But this conversation we're having today is not just about the auto industry, as you mentioned. This is really about how powerful and wealthy capitalists are able to essentially insulate themselves from any negative consequences of their actions, even when those actions kill people.
Yeah, and there's another example. The FDA has recently created new rules that essentially allow untested or inadequately tested drugs to be sold, to be pushed in hospitals and elsewhere, particularly some of the newer antibiotics that have not had much testing. And that this is going to be an enormously profitable area for drug manufacturers. So again, we see the Congress and the federal government encouraging profit-making operations at the cost of the health and welfare of the people.
Ah, I see.
That's it. We can go home now.
Okay. Thank you all for listening.
Yeah, right. I want to hear from people who have some thoughts on how, number one, on how this can be remedied. Can this be remedied? And secondly, on what is the realm of possibility within this existing system? You know, when Nader published his book, it was a big scandal. But nothing really changed. Not really. Cars are still deadly.
So didn't seatbelt regulations grow out of Nader's activism?
Seatbelt regulations and eventually the exploding airbags.
Exploding airbags.
Which now it turns out, if you have an accident, it sends shards of metal into your brain.
Right.
I think that's really cool.
There's two sides to this conversation, really. First of all is the fact that safety regulations in something like automobiles especially, but really across all sectors of manufacturing, are absolutely essential. Capitalism likes to walk around touting itself. Here, I'm talking about an economic system as if it were a person. Boy, I've been drinking the Kool-Aid. Capitalism likes to walk around talking about itself.
Capitalism. Here comes Mr. Capitalism.
Hey, how's it going? Hey. as if the free market will somehow magically arrive at a solution that satisfies everybody's needs.
Well, as if the free market were free.
I'm getting there, yes.
Sorry.
As if, for example, it provides for everything. It gives you a good product at the lowest price that's perfectly safe. It pays its laborers well. It protects the environment. All these solutions are arrived at through the magic of the free market. Why? Because consumers will simply choose to spend their dollars elsewhere. If GM makes a car that kills you, well, consumers will go buy another car, and that's the magic of the free market.
Right. And I should remind people, you're listening to KBOO, yes, 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. I guess I'm Joe. 231, I'm not even sure who I am anymore.
Yeah.
231-8187. We'd love to hear from you.
We would. But as even a child could tell you, it's not good enough to simply say the free market will correct a situation where cars are killing people. Obviously, it's important to step in and prevent those deaths in the first place. That's why we have safety regulations. But the flip side of this, of course, is that safety regulations and safety improvements in cars, like airbags, have to work correctly. There has to be some sort of system to monitor that, to test these things, to make sure they're working well. And in the event that they don't, then whoever made them needs to be held accountable, criminally accountable. Now, I just want to throw in the fact that I was in an accident a few years ago on which a side impact airbag saved my life. So I'm not here to act as an apologist for the people who make these things because they need to make a good product that works. I'm here to say without the regulations that required that side impact airbag, I wouldn't be talking to you right now.
So we really are talking about a balance within the construct,
yes,
of capitalism in a society that is fundamentally capitalist.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I guess I can live with that.
Let's go to the phones.
Let's go to the phones.
Juan, good morning.
Hey, guys. Joe, it wasn't the Pinto who wrote the book about it. It was the Corvair.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
So about 10 years before the Pinto. And you're right about it, pretty much everything that they fought. They fought even seatbelts, let alone airbags.
They did, yeah.
You used to get impaled on your steering wheel or...
Yeah, my uncle actually died impaled on a steering wheel.
Yeah, so what you're all saying is true. I had a sister talk to me about unions, you know, and how she gave some example of some gross overstepping of any reasonableness by a union, talking about some worker that didn't do anything, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, the only reason I'm here this weekend visiting is because there were unions. And she said they could go away now. And I said, you wouldn't believe how fast we lost everything we got from unions if they went away.
Well, that's really important. It's not exactly our topic, but I think you're right. I think that one of the things that makes...
There's an ongoing battle, right?
Uh-huh.
And if we don't support unions and if we don't take money out of politics, that's the answer to your question. Corporatism is Nazism. That's what we've got. According to Mussolini, corporatism is what he defined Nazism as. That's what we've got.
He defined fascism. Defined it as corporatism. Yeah.
Right, fascism. Sorry.
Yeah, so that's like my Pinot mistake.
Right? Mm. We've got it right now.
Well, no. You can argue that the system is a friendly fascism, which is my term. But in fact, we have not, thank God, got true fascism. We haven't demonized a particular ethnic group particularly. We haven't consciously and deliberately. Pardon me?
Well, Joe, we've got black people that get killed walking down the street or hanging in their cell. Okay,
so that's
there's
true.
An ethnic group. There's an ethnic group that might differ as far as what their life in the United States is like, and it's not just black people, Mexican people, sometimes Asian people. I mean, there are people who would disagree with the statement, and you know, we get to vote. We get to vote for two people who have been vetted by the people in charge.
That's true. That's certainly true. So, and we will be choosing between a neocon, which is Hillary, and who knows what weirdness, maybe even Donald Trump, as the candidate of the Republican Party.
Yeah. And you know what? I'll tell you what. Bernie's getting big crowds, and it makes me think he's going to have an accident.
Are you saying that somebody will assassinate Bernie Sanders?
His plane will crash. Something will happen. If Bernie keeps going the way Bernie is going right now, he's getting the largest crowds of anybody in the field, Republican or Democrat.
Well, I hope you're wrong. I hope that you're wrong.
I hope I'm wrong, too. Believe me, because I'm 100% for the guy. But somebody said that he was starting to look like Robert F. Kennedy. And all I could think is, well, remember what happened to Robert F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Okay.
Got us off the topic.
Yeah, that's quite off the topic. I really thank you for the call and the correction, by the way. Thanks a lot.
Take care,
man.
He makes a very good point about Mussolini, who talked about... said fascism
state.
Was the union of corporate and state interests.
Right.
And
With pet unions. Right.
It's hard to look at our current situation and see that we're too far from that. We're not very far from that.
Well, what we have that protects us, what our last bulwark really is our Bill of Rights.
Yes.
And in fact, a large part of the population that insists on struggling for those rights.
That's right.
As well as outraged populations who are discriminated against historically and presently.
Hey, ain't nobody going to take my guns. This is KBOO. 503-231-8187 is the number to call to participate on this program, which goes by the name of the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. I'm Abe.
I'm Joe.
That's Joe. You can also leave a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Abe and Joe. Steve writes in to say, just last week, I got a recall notice from Honda for the airbags in my 2004 CRV. Yes, my 11-year-old vehicle is just now getting recalled for a deadly safety defect.
Yeah, lucky he didn't have a head-on.
Indeed. In fact, this is a record year for automobile recalls, prompting some of these regulations we were just talking about in the Senate. 33.8 million airbag employers made in Japan by the Takata Corporation have been recalled so far.
But nobody goes to jail. And that's
nobody goes to jail.
Nobody gets punished.
Those airbags go in 11 different, or the cars made by 11 different automakers. Honda, Fiat, Chrysler, BMW, Ford, General Motors, Daimler Trucks, Mazda, Mitsubishi, Nissan, Subaru, Toyota, all affected by the recall of the airbags. I could go on and on and on.
Well, but does that mean my car is deadly?
No, but you can use your vehicle identification number to see if your car needs a recall.
How do you do that?
I don't know. It just says here, according to the Oregonian, that you can do it. So I'll have to see if I can find out. Maybe Engineer Steve can find out for us.
Yeah, Engineer Steve is so wise, and we are so silly. We have people calling us at 231-8187. Who do we got?
Jim, good morning.
Hi there. I guess most of my stuff's been covered. I was talking about saying the Pinto was not the car that Ralph Nader wrote about. It was
no,
Corvair.
Corvair.
Right, I made a mistake.
Well, that's all right. We're listening. another thing that I want to mention, well, actually, it was like that last comment about that many millions of airbags being problems with vehicles forever. I'm seeing them going back. Anyhow, and the other thing I wanted to mention was that we do have some decent stuff. I mean, I had a Ford product that I had in total last month, and the airbag worked wonderfully for me. And so I'm convinced airbags are good. You know?
Oh, I think in both in theory and practicality, a decently designed non-metal throwing airbag is an absolute brilliant thing.
I owe my life to one.
And that, on that comment, that's why I'm waiting to find out which vehicles have that particular brand and of airbag before I get another car. But I'm convinced airbags are a step above stuff back in the Pinto and Corvair days, you know. So that's about all I had to say. And thanks, you guys. Interesting program.
Sure. You know, speaking of the Corvair, my folks bought a Corvair as a business car, a station wagon. And it was most amazing in that it threw oil. The engine threw oil. All Corvair engines apparently threw oil. So the whole back end would be covered with oil from the engine that was just blown out.
There's got to be some symbolism there.
I think so. A filthy, dirty car.
Okay, so I am. Let's take a phone call, and I'm going to keep researching on how you find out if your car needs a recall.
Okay. Michael, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, first of all, if you guys are so in favor of airbags, then I assume you're going to vote for Donald Trump?
Absolutely. You got us.
Really. That makes perfect logical sense. We're going to vote for Donald Trump because, after all, he is an airbag.
That was my point.
Yeah.
That was a joke.
Very
I'm
nice.
Sorry.
Well played, sir.
Well done.
And not only that, but a hot airbag.
Hey. Yeah.
Yes. Well, okay. Well, now that we're off to such a good start, I owned one of those Corvairs.
Really?
Yeah, before Nader's book came out. I owned one.
You're not that old.
I am that old.
Oh, okay.
Anyways, I owned the car, and then the book came out while I owned the car.
Great.
So I did this very careful thing. There was a place on a freeway where I lived where there was a really sharp curve.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did what a test pilot does, and I went through that curve at ever-increasing speeds,
until you found that you lost control?
Until I was looking for the problem that the book described.
Uh-huh.
And at any speed through a sharp curve that a sane person would be doing, there was no problem with the car. There was just no problem with it. You would have had to have been, you know, I didn't do this because I didn't drive that way. You'd have had to try one of those racing turns where the rear end is skidding around behind you. And I didn't try that because I didn't.
So you're saying the car was really safe and Nader was wrong?
Yeah, and I've read stuff like that, you know, unless my car didn't have some manufacturing defect. But his book said unsafe at any speed, and it just wasn't true.
Well,
I had the car.
Wasn't he talking about cars that had a manufacturing defect?
No, Nader's book about the Corvair didn't say it was manufacturing defect. It was like a design that made them deadly to go through curves in. And I took the car through curves, and there was no problem with it.
So what's your conclusion?
My conclusion is that sometimes, I mean, look, I believe in regulations. I also believe that there's such a thing as overregulation, and I think that underregulation is as harmful as overregulation, you know, in different ways, but they're both harmful. But there's also hysterias that happen, and I think the thing about the Corvair in particular, given that I owned one, was a hysteria. Just like the thing about Alar and Apples, if you remember, about 15 years ago, was turned out to be a hysteria, and NPR had to apologize for the original story. So, you know, yeah, things need to be regulated, but did you guys ever go into Lowe's and read a ladder?
No.
Read a ladder? I thought you climb a ladder. I don't understand.
No. You go into Lowe's next time, go look at a ladder, and there's enough reading material on a ladder that you could spend a lot of time reading the ladder, and there's all this stuff about when you're going up the ladder, don't take it and lean it on a power line.
Oh, yeah, that's good advice.
Or, you know, don't put it down and don't put the ground end of it down in slippery mud. I mean, people...
So your point is that there's overprotection from the government? Is that their point there?
There's overregulation sometimes, and there's underregulation at other times.
How is a safety notice on a ladder overregulation?
Well, when you think of, I mean, how many people are so dumb that they're going to lean...
No. How is a safety notice on a ladder overregulation?
Because the money that's being spent to hire people to write these and to stick them on the ladders, the resources that are being used to put these useless labels on ladders, could be better used doing things that are actually useful instead of putting all this stuff on a ladder.
Well, it seems to me, first of all, that if, in fact, it's a waste, that's a corporate decision. Second of all, the requirements about ladders really do deal with the fact that some people, not you, of course, can be kind of silly.
Well,
people,
you know,
can be really stupid with ladders.
The people who are going to lean a ladder on a power line are also not going to read a label on a ladder that says something about leaning it on a power line.
Okay, man. Listen, I'm going to pass on all of this. I'll check with you later. Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye.
Bye. I don't know what to say. I think it makes sense to warn people not to put their aluminum ladder against a power line.
Yeah, it makes sense to me, too. And really, when I hear people complaining about labeling laws being overregulation, you know,
it's
I just don't
even
have
regulation.
Much sympathy.
It's just a warning.
Really, how expensive is that, really? Well, you pay somebody to design a label, then you print a bunch of them, which at large quantities is not very expensive per unit, I'm guessing. And then you slap that on your ladder. Big deal.
Right.
If even one person's life is saved, then it's worth it.
And, in fact, if you wanted to add stuff to the warnings, you could say if you're over 65 and kind of dim-witted, don't climb a ladder. I mean, you know, you could have all kinds of ageist stuff on a ladder.
It's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go to the phones. Mike, good morning.
Good morning.
What's on your mind?
Well, a couple of points and a question. Of course, the last discussion made me think of a big old airbag. But
are you talking about Trump now, or are you talking about the airbag? That's a joke.
Both of them.
Okay.
Both of them. Hate to be name calling, but
I don't mind calling names. Go ahead.
Okay. The airbag situation, this, that, and the other thing. It seems to me that GM, specifically in the article, seems to me to be like Nike or the Little Green Giant vegetable brand. They're a marketing agency now. They don't build anything. I think they're trying to get off the hook for their suppliers.
Well, wait a minute. Now GM does make cars in the United States. It also buys cars outside of the United States. And many of the parts, you're correct, many of the parts do come from other places. And cars are made in Mexico and elsewhere. But it's an American corporation, should be subject to American law. And that American law, this is our point, should really hold responsible companies, corporations, who knowingly produce products that are dangerous.
Yeah. I'd like to understand better what's made here and what's made by other companies, even if it's here.
But if it's,
I doubt there's very little that's made by quote unquote GM. I know the bailout of GM and so forth probably had more to do with their financing side of GM.
Well, that may or may not be
true. I think it's more like Little Green Giant. They don't grow anything. They just market a brand.
Well,
Nike it doesn't make anything. They just brand things, and I don't know, in Asia and so forth. Maybe it's a little old fashioned, but at least they have the common decency when they are negligent in that way or corrupt in that way that these CEOs and leaders just go somewhere and kill themselves.
No, they don't. That's an interesting myth. The honorable suicide of a failed executive, it's pretty rare.
It's pretty rare. It's rare. It is rare, yeah.
I mean, if it exists at all.
It happened for sure, I know, in the last 10 years, but then again, also with China. So.
Okay, anyway, thanks for the call, man. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
231-8187. Are we not getting any women anymore? Or is this just a boy show?
Yeah, I think you scare them off, man.
What?
I think you scare them off.
Why?
Because you're kind of weird.
All right. 231-8187. Let's hear from some incredibly brilliant other person.
Who's next, Steve?
Uh-oh.
I say a light on, but I guess it was... It's not
yeah, no, it's okay. No, don't call us. We don't need you. We'll just talk a little bit more about GM and how I chose for the opening music here a 1950s ad, which I think characterized the whole expansionist modality of the auto industry, using Dinah Shore, who was a popular singer of that era, who had a very popular television show, who sang this vigorous song which links American patriotism to the purchase of a Chevrolet. I thought that was an interesting linkage and a way of creating a popular branding that did, in fact, survive for a long, long time. Hmm. And I think it's really a part of... We talked a little bit ago about the notion of a corporate state. And if there's ever a propaganda piece for the corporate state, Dinah Shore's show song would be an example of that propaganda. Hmm. That's all.
Okay. And I want to emphasize that this conversation, it's not just about the auto industry.
No.
We're really using this as a point of entry to make a larger point, which is that the mechanics of government... the parts of our government that regulate industry, the parts of government that create regulations that protect your safety and your well-being and your health, are subject to the whims of manufacturers with a lot of money to throw around in Washington.
Yeah.
The vote that prevented these regulations from passing, the ones that would have made it a crime to knowingly sell a defective automobile, was defeated on a party line vote. All the Republicans voting against, all Democrats voting for. This is not an endorsement of the Democratic Party, but this is just a notice that the Republican Party clearly knows which side or knows who butters its bread and is clearly not working to protect your interests, but rather those wealthy people who make cars and a whole bunch of other stuff. They are not on your side. They are not trying to make your life safer or better or happier or healthier. They are there to protect and enhance the interests of the ruling class. End of story.
Yeah, and I think it's really important to understand that the regulations that are being talked about that brought about the possibility of creating a responsibility, a criminal responsibility for these things, and it's not lightweight stuff. It's not some weird thing on a ladder or something. In fact, the Chevy Cobalt, the Saturn Ion, and other small cars had faulty ignition systems, which would shut off. You go cruising down the highway, 50, 60, 70 miles an hour. Your power steering, your airbags, your power brakes, and so on, all are dependent on the operation of the motor. Suddenly, the ignition, for no apparent reason, turns off.
Huh.
And there you are in a car which is hard, if not impossible, to control. because our dependence on these systems is so great. And it was known by the manufacturers, and they did nothing about it.
And they paid no penalty.
And they paid no penalty. This is really serious.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine how serious it could be. In fact, people died.
Yeah.
People died as a consequence. But nobody was held criminally responsible. So there was an effort in Congress to make it a criminal responsibility. Not, hey, you made a mistake and you fixed it. That's okay. That's okay. No. What it was you made a mistake. You knew you had a mistake. You didn't care. You keep pushing it. And people die.
Yeah, that's true.
And nobody goes to jail.
God bless America.
Oh.
Who's next, Steve? LJ, you're next.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Great conversation, great show. All right. I don't agree with Michael on almost nothing. but I do agree with the ladder thing.
The ladder thing. You don't mean the ladder thing, you mean the ladder thing.
Yeah. All the little cautionary tales.
Right.
And that essentially is to cover the company from frivolous lawsuits.
Exactly. Thank you for making that point. It also is, it may seem to you and I that these things are sort of obvious, but you know what? If IQ means anything, and I'm not sure that it does, the range of IQ is 100 to 200, I mean 0 to 200. The average is supposed to be 100. That means that half the people are below that amount intellectual skills. And that means that without education, those folks will put their ladder against an electric power line.
Right. and then sue the company because the company didn't warn them not to do it.
Right. So the company says, hey, don't do that. And that's fine with me. And I don't think it costs much to have a label slapped on a ladder. And
well,
it might save some lives.
Wasn't there a woman several years ago who spilled coffee on her lap and then sued McDonald's because McDonald's didn't tell her that the coffee was
There was that case, and I don't remember the particulars of it, but I believe the coffee wasn't just hot. It was really hot.
Right. Now, can we get to the Pinto? You brought up the Pinto before.
Yeah, my mistake. Anyway, go ahead.
Right. No. Cool. I'm happy that you did. The gas tank on the Pinto was a design flaw.
Oh, yeah. Right? I remember that.
And Ford knew that if, in case of an accident, people will die in a fiery death. All right. But the bean counters at Ford said it would cost us more money to fix the design flaw than it would to settle with people and not accept any responsibility. All right. Because they knew that the people who were going to buy Pintos were poor people, and they would be happy with a $250,000 settlement from Ford, and then sign an agreement to keep their mouth shut, than it would be for Ford to correct the design flaw.
And let me guess, Ford.
Point one.
Ford never had to admit any wrongdoing.
And no. Boom.
Right.
Boom. Now, let's bring up Germany, all right? The German auto worker, his compensation is $63 an hour, Abe and Joe, in salary and in bonuses and in other perks. The also add to the mix that the German auto worker union has a seat at the corporate table, and the decisions are made collectively with the manufacturer, with the government, and with the labor unions. And that's why, arguably, the Germans build the best car in the world. And I will take my responses off the air.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Have a great day. Thank you for the show.
Yeah, a couple of things. I want to mention the reason why there was a Pinto and a Chevette and all that other stuff. This was an effort, ill-conceived, to compete with the rising interest in small cars out of Japan and Germany, in fact. And the cars were hastily thrown together. They were poorly designed. And it was a disaster for the auto industry in America. It didn't work. The cars were not good enough to compete in that marketplace. And what our caller just said about the way in which workers are compensated in Europe, particularly in Germany, but also in France and elsewhere, is really typical. It's really true. We in the United States right now are continually lowering effectively real wages and real benefits and attacking the working class at every level. Both the Democrats, unfortunately, and the Republicans are doing this. What is happening is that the United States, is becoming less and less the demand market, that is the place where people are buying a lot of stuff. More and more of capitalism is focused on huge markets in places like India and Japan and China. So what we're really seeing is that we're becoming more and more service dependent and less a significant contributor to the long-term benefit of working class.
Yes, and our alleged corporate benefactors, our employers, for a great many Americans, really don't care.
Right, and they're not really American.
No, they're not. I'm glad you brought that up. Engineer Steve just shot some statistics over here. Lest you think that these manufacturers, who are very effectively lobbying against your own safety, lest you think they're acting in a patriotic manner, just consider this for a fact. Of all the pickup trucks currently for sale in the United States, mm-hmm. Three of them top the charts for having the most parts that are manufactured in either the United States or Canada. So of all the parts that go into a pickup truck, and there's lots and lots of them, three trucks have at least 75% parts in the U.S. and Canada. They are the Ford F-150 and then two Japanese trucks, the Honda Ridgeline and the Toyota Tundra. Really? So two of your top three domestically made trucks are not even made by American manufacturers. In fact, GM, their fleet of pickup trucks averages less than 50% parts manufactured in the United States. And that's not even getting into where these trucks are assembled. So not only are American corporations lobbying effectively against your health and safety, they are not even really making American products.
And that's really true, and it's outsourcing totally. I mean, I remember when television sets suddenly were all being made wherever the market was cheapest. For a while, it was Mexico. I don't know where TV sets are now made, but wherever it's cheap.
All right, coming up today on KBOO 9, Alternative Radio Law Professor Marjorie Cohn speaks on death from above, drones.
Drones!
Sounds like a movie title.
You know the drones are getting in the way of firefighting airplanes?
Yes, I've heard about that.
Incredible.
At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. Pretty soon, there's going to have to be one person in your firefighting detachment whose job it is to stand around with a shotgun
and blow away the drones.
Drones out of the sky. Oh, boy. I'd laugh if it weren't so tragic. At 10:15, I'm laughing anyway. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, former Philippine Congresswoman Liza Maza discusses the U.S. government preventing her from leaving her country to give expert testimony on U.S. human rights violations in the Philippines. Also, Flashpoints contributor and Counterpunch writer KJ No tells the story of the comfort women, mostly Korean women, forced into sex slavery by the Japanese military. At 11 on stage and studio, host D-May Roberts looks at a new musical play called Vanport by Shalonda R. Sims, featuring the Vanport community during World War II that was washed away in the 1948 flood. Portlanders, if you're not familiar with the story of the city of Vanport, it is fascinating.
Really?
Yes. I won't go into it now, but look it up. She also features...
There's a great painting of that flood at Portland State in Smith Memorial Center.
Really?
Done by Isaac Shamsuddin. It's really a good, really a good painting.
All right. She also features Never Give Up, an event that honors Portland native Minoru Yasui, who challenged the constitutionality of a curfew imposed on the people of Japanese descent during the start of World War II in Portland. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, local artist Deb Stoner talks about her botanical portraits at Camerwork Gallery. All this and more coming up today on KBOO, your listener-supported radio station.
Yes, and we'd like to hear from you, 231-8187. We're talking about GM's absolute corruption and the corruption of Congress, which refuses, particularly the Republican side of it, to hold corporate individuals responsible when they knowingly produce a dangerous product.
Who's next, Steve? George, good morning.
Good morning. I heard Joe, I think a few minutes ago, mention something about the corporate claims of patriotism for our country. And a few years ago, I read a couple of books by a guy named John Loftus. And I'll bet one or both of you have read one or two of those books. He was an attorney for the U.S. Justice Department and began because he had a boss there who apparently was, as he says, the real deal, a really honest boss at the Justice Department, wanted him to look into the U.S.'s involvement with Nazi collaborators in World War II. And in that, one of his...
You mean like the British Royals? Oh, sorry, never mind.
Well, I don't want to sidetrack you, but
yeah. Yeah, really, that was irrelevant. Go ahead.
Yeah, and in one of his books, and I was looking at it here, I can't find the reference, but and he and a guy named Mark Ahrens from Australia wrote another book. But in one of the books, I think he's got two or three out, I think it might be America's Nazi Secret, he talks about how during World War II, some of the major U.S. corporations allowed some of their top factory managers to be loaned to Adolf Hitler's Nazi Germany to make sure that the fighter planes, bombers, ammunition, and weapons produced by Nazi Germany to murder U.S. and other Allied soldiers and shoot down their planes were technically top line. And these managers who worked treasonably, according to Loftus, throughout World War II, they were American corporate managers who worked in Nazi Germany to make sure, you know, the high quality of the weapons being used to kill Allied soldiers. You would think after World War II, according to Loftus in one of his books, that these people would have been prosecuted for treason. Nope, he says. So I'll just, if you haven't heard about this, there's a couple of books. One of them is America's Nazi Secret, and that I think it's in there somewhere, and maybe it's in another one of his books. So I'll just hang up, and maybe someone who's read this would talk about it, according to Loftus. Anyway, that's all I have.
No, that's interesting. One of the things that nobody really wants to talk about is the romance in Western countries with fascism. A lot of that was driven by a deep-seated fear of socialism and communism, particularly the Soviet system. But that is not an excuse. It's an explanation. And in fact, I made a joke about the Royals, but in fact, there was a great romance with the militarism of the Nazis and of the fascists, and it was a thing. It was a real thing during the 1920s, 30s, and clear almost up to beginning of World War II. So you know, you've got to really understand that, and the America Firsters, people like Lindbergh, really were part of a vast support network for the Nazi movement.
Henry Ford.
Henry Ford. Oh, let's not forget Henry Ford. Let's not forget Henry Ford.
Prescott Bush.
Oh, Prescott Bush?
Prescott Bush, W's granddad.
Oh, no.
Senator Prescott Bush, who was actually indicted under the Trading with the Enemies Act for helping the Nazis to launder money.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
But, you know, banking.
America first, man.
Hey, yeah.
503-231-8187. Who's next, Steve? Christopher, good morning. Christopher, you're on the air. All right, well, we'll try to come back to Christopher. I want to make something clear here. We're talking about the clout and the cash that corporations throw around in Washington to ensure, A, that they don't have to increase their manufacturing costs by actually making their products safe, and B, to ensure they don't have to face any sort of penalty, criminal, or actually they do face civil penalties, but no criminal penalties for making faulty or even deadly products.
Which they know to be faulty and deadly.
Right. But that's of a piece with another movement that you mentioned, and that is the movement to disenfranchise American labor. Everywhere you look, not only at the federal level, but at state levels, legislatures, as well as Congress, are passing laws that are undercutting the wages earned by American workers. In Indiana just recently, they did away with prevailing construction wage law. This has happened in a few other states around the country. Everywhere that people are trying to increase the minimum wage, you will find conservative forces, corporate forces, opposing these things. It's harder now in many states across the union, ironically, to join a union than it ever has been before. This is all of a piece. This is all part of the 1%, and even farther than that, the 0.1%'s attempt to absolutely entrench itself at the top of a vast global economic pyramid. And they're doing this by undermining all the gains that were made during the labor movement here at around the turn of the 20th century and the early part of the 20th century and during Roosevelt's New Deal. And you know what? They've almost completed their job.
And it's really important to understand that the economic analysis that dominates American economic thinking these days ignores the second element of what we used to teach in high school and in college, supply and demand. They're always talking about supply. They're never talking about demand because it's no longer important, apparently, that American workers have enough money to be able to buy stuff because they can turn to other markets in other parts of the world.
Yeah, so they really don't care about you. But they're certainly going to tell you all day long to buy American.
Right, right. No, it's really important. And unfortunately, we don't have a wide spectrum of political discourse or political parties. There is a left within the Democratic Party. But in fact, it is, you know, it's Bernie Sanders, it's people who are popular, but who have no access to the kinds of money that it now takes to become a viable candidate for national office or for a state office or congressional office.
That's true. And as one of our callers mentioned earlier today, in terms of the presidential election, we'll ultimately be choosing between two candidates who have been vetted by the very wealthiest among us, who are then satisfied that whoever goes on to win the White House won't actually threaten their prerogatives.
And if you assume that the Clintons are the Clintons, not just him and her, he and she, then you have to realize that what a lot of what Clinton did in terms of trade changes and so on were essentially reactionary and harmful to American working people. And that that Hillary Clinton was a big supporter of our ill-conceived and ill-carried out wars in the Middle East that have put us into a situation where we'll be fighting for 30 years. And that will be the liberal leadership if and when Clinton gets the nomination of the Democratic Party. Kind of depressing. And then the Republicans, who are so weird, I don't even know where to go with that.
Well, here's where you can go. It's really entertaining.
Yeah, it is.
They're so crazy. And they're so wholeheartedly embracing their crazy that it's really, really entertaining.
Right, the anti-science element of it, all kinds of wonderful things.
Indeed. And I'll reiterate something I've said periodically on this show over the years. The best way sometimes to weather the insanity in modern America is to cultivate a really good sense of humor and a really good sense of irony. They will get you through some very difficult situations.
But I want to see, I think it's important that we have a real powerful outrage that unites Americans, the majority of people, in interest of working people, of minority people, of the majority of people.
Yeah.
Because in fact, what's happening is that little bits and big bits of worker rights, of justice, and so on, are just being destroyed.
I have a slogan, a maxim, if you will.
Go for it.
We all do better when we all do better.
Yeah, I'll go for that.
If you put more cash in the pockets of ordinary working people, we all do better.
No, it's actually true.
It's a fact.
Well, it's been proven. It's been proven to be true. In fact, the time when the American economy was healthiest actually was during the war, post-war. When I say war, I'm so old, I'm talking about World War II. During the war, post-war, clear up into the 1960s. And in fact, when you look at the changes that were made in the economy through the administrations of people like, well, Ronald Reagan, who seems to be some kind of hero, but was a horror in everything he did. And Clinton.
I don't know. He's good in that movie with the chimp.
Oh, yes, the movie with the chimp.
Let's go to the phones. Peter, good morning.
Yes, hi, good morning. So, more or less first-time caller, great show. Can't say enough about you guys. And I'll try to make it short. But who if anybody is talking or asking the kids and getting involved with the kids in schools about the future. I mean,
you mean what they're learning, what they're being taught?
Well, it's basically a process of educating and getting the kids involved about what it is that can be influenced with the kids in forums like these, because, I mean, how many kids are listening to programs like these?
Oh, well, you know, it's school time.
Well, I got to go, according to data that I've seen, the younger generation, I'm talking about people under 30, are resoundingly progressive on a whole host of issues. So maybe young people aren't listening to programs like this one, but they're certainly getting the message that business as usual is bad for them.
And I think there's a real groundswell of opinion now turning against kind of the mythic traditions that we were taught actually in school, including the notions of the honor of the Confederacy, which is a disgusting concept. I was taught, I mean, this is really irrelevant to the topic here, but I was taught in high school and in grade school that, yeah, slavery was bad, but, you know, black people, they can handle that hot weather sun and because they come from Africa. This is the kind of crap that we were taught in school. So now people are challenging that, and that's really a good thing. So I'm hopeful about the younger generation. And when I say the younger generation, I'm talking about people in their 20s and less.
Well, and I really appreciate the feedback. Thank you guys so much. And as far as, like, the dynamics and philosophies about, like, you know, especially white people like myself being very, very bad people against humanity, when at some point will politicians talk about overpopulation with the world? I'll take my question off.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
I'm not going to deal with that question today, but it's an interesting one.
Well, part of the answer to that question is here and now in Oregon. Our legislature just passed a law making oral contraception available over the counter.
Okay.
That's huge. That is one of the most progressive pieces of legislation that I can recall in recent memory.
I almost made a nasty joke, so
that,
I didn't do that.
Well,
okay. All right.
We'll leave it at that.
We got a caller. Let's get it.
Ken, good morning.
Hi, guys. Thanks for the discussion. Really quick, I know we're almost out of time. Thinking about bad products that the manufacturers know are dangerous and push on us anyway, statin drugs. S-T-A-T-I-N for lowering cholesterol. Looks to look at are the great cholesterol myth or cholesterol clarity.
Yeah.
Bad stuff. Big pharma, greasing doctors' palms. It's tragic. And people are paying with their lives and their brains and their heart health.
Yeah, in fact, I'm glad you mentioned it. I mentioned this, the editorial on the FDA in the New York Times yesterday, the 20th. So, yeah, this is real stuff, and it is really worth looking at. The fact of the matter is that Congress...
Easy one to remember, the great cholesterol myth, and one of the co-authors is named Sinatra. Easy to remember.
Okay, thanks, man. It is really the case that the Congress seems to be the handmaiden of the... this is not a new thing or an unusual thing, but it's really the case the Congress is the handmaiden of the ruling class, and the Republican Party is the close, incestuous cousin to the ruling class.
Ew.
Ew. Yeah, sorry. Ew.
Ew.
All right. 231-8187. We got time for maybe one more call.
Maybe one more phone call.
Maybe. No callers. Well, we don't need that.
Nobody's queuing up right at the moment.
Okay. So, where are we? Well, we are is we're talking about how GM has and others have avoided responsibility for corporate incompetence and corporate meanness in putting out products that are knowingly fatal or injurious.
You know, it just occurred to me that this program, combined with our last two or three programs, we've had a number of very, I think, informative and energized sort of big picture discussion about economic trends both here and around the world.
Yes.
And I'm thinking maybe we ought to continue this, perhaps digging in a little further to the labor question that we just touched on today.
I think that's a good idea. Maybe we could have some labor people.
Oh, my goodness.
Labor people on our air. I am always concerned that we're getting a lot of male response and not hearing a lot from women. That's something we need to work on as well.
Well, I think talk radio tends to be a male-dominated medium. Not just here.
Because men bloviate.
Men bloviate. Yes, we do. But yeah, absolutely. We would love to hear more female opinions on this show.
Okay, we've run out of time. We want you to stay tuned to KBOO because it has the best in public affairs and music. And it's really worth listening to. And you can do it while you drive.
We'll see you next week.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Do you worry that corporate power is totally out of control? Tune into the KBOO Evening News every Tuesday evening at 5 p.m. beginning August 5th to hear the new weekly commentary by yours truly, Paul Cienfuegos. I'll be sharing stories about communities that are rising up against corporate control and passing laws that exercise their right to govern themselves. That's every Tuesday on the KBOO Evening News beginning August 5th. Don't miss it.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on Alternative Radio, law professor Marjorie Cohn speaks on Death from Above, Drones. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, former Philippine Congresswoman Liza Maza discusses the U.S. government preventing her from leaving her country to give expert testimony on U.S. human rights violations in the Philippines. Also, Flashpoints contributor and Counterpunch writer KJ